Hello, and welcome back to Movies with Kane and Tal. It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for listening. It means so much to us. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We are an indie podcast, and every time someone clicks subscribe, we do a little happy dance. Okay, for your listening pleasure, today we have an alien invasion double feature, although aliens of a different kind. We're talking Tomorrow When the War Began, the Australian film based on the very successful John Marsden book series, and Rim of the World. As always, let's start with a little bit of the trailer. Here we have Tomorrow When the War Began, 2010.
Occupying forces have now taken several major coastal cities.
Any idea whose army it is?
It doesn't matter who they are because they're here now and we've just got to deal with it.
I don't know about you guys. I'm not too good at doing nothing.
People are dying out there.
Everything's a risk from now on.
We know this country better than they do. We can use that to our advantage.
We can go out there using hit-and-run tactics.
We have to start acting like soldiers.
And we are back.
Act 2, scene 2.
Okay.
Take it away, Kane.
All right, and now we're into the...
Yeah.
Alien invasion double feature. This is more my wheelhouse, starting with Tomorrow When the War Began.
Mm-hmm. Australian film.
Australian film. The directorial debut of Stuart Beattie.
Okay.
I believe I'm saying his name right.
And we are comparing this to...
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Rim of the World. We will get to that. Stuart Beattie is a really weird creative. Like, he got his big start writing Collateral, another Tom Cruise movie with...
Really?
Which...
So, hang on. Is this guy Australian or...
No, this guy is true blue Australian.
Okay.
Flat out. And he got his start...
Flat out.
and he got started writing for Michael Mann. And honestly, like, Collateral is a brilliant movie. So well written.
Yeah.
But watching his career after that is kind of depressing, honestly. Like, how to put it? This is his directorial debut. He's only done one other directorial job since...
Mm-hmm.
With I, Frankenstein, a film that, as we near closer to 2020, I have less apprehension calling one of the dumbest movies of the decade.
Okay.
It is atrocious on so many levels, but yeah, and honestly, I can kind of see some of that in this. It's not, it is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Tomorrow When the War Began is not a bad movie.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Were you familiar with it prior to me suggesting it as a film?
I was familiar with it to an extent as far as it, like, it being an Aussie product and it being based on this, you know, best-selling series of books.
So you never read them?
I don't read much.
Okay. Because I read them in high school.
Right.
All
okay.
of them.
Right.
At the time as they came out. John Marsden, huge fan. Changed my life. These books changed my life. I was obsessed. Utterly obsessed.
Right.
Obsessed with these characters, this story, this concept. It's probably where my post-apocalyptic, you know, journey kind of
started.
I can
totally get that.
Right?
I totally get that.
So I'm 15, 16 in school, and I'm introduced to Ellie and Lee and all these guys, and I just went nuts. I used to wait until the next one came out in the library and purchased it, and I'd go up. My name would be the first one in there that had borrowed it from the library. So I just wanted to know if you had read or were familiar at all with the story and that beforehand. But anyway, get back to what you were saying.
All right. Actually, connecting to what you were saying about my connections to the story, as far as the actual books and this movie in particular, I'm not that familiar with it going in.
Right.
But considering, like, my, you know, movie critical come up,
mm-hmm.
what happened, like, you know, around 2012 when Hunger Games was, like, picking up steam and creating its own wave of post-apocalyptic dramas about, you know, teenagers, taking back the world kind of thing. I really get the feeling that this movie would have become a series if it had just been made at that time. It was like too soon for the trend, for it to really ride the trend.
That's interesting, because that was one of the questions that I came up with in my mind when I was watching it again, because I watched it as soon as it came out, because obviously when I heard they were making it, I was like, whoa! You know, I'm so enough. Excited. I was a bit older by that point and probably... Anyway, I'll get back to that. But I did wonder why the rest of the series didn't get made, because it's now a TV series.
Of course, because that's usually what happens when these movies kind of get off the, right. the ground. Hello, Divergent, if that series ever comes out.
So you knew of it as being like a precursor to when this sort of really kicked off.
That's my understanding of it at the very least. But with that said, this is markedly different from like the stuff that has basically become like my generation's fiction. Like,
oh, big time. I think it was so Australian.
Well, I'll get to that. I will get to that.
But I bet you will.
It's just that with stuff like The Hunger Games and Divergent and, or, you know, like what I call the third wave of like young adult adaptations, they're always set in, you know, these very fictionalized societies, like the stuff that could only exist in the realms of fiction.
I see.
Whereas with this, it starts off in our reality, in our world, in, you know, in the Australia that you and I know.
Yes.
Which makes what actually happens in it a bit head-scratching, because, how to put it, when I said that this was an alien invasion double feature, I didn't really expect that I'd be talking about illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly feel really uncomfortable getting into the whole, like, Asian invasion side of this whole story.
Okay, so I'll stop you there and I'll make a point about that. When the books came out, the author, John Marsden, was very careful to not specify a race. A race was never specified in the books. You never knew who the invaders were. They didn't have a language or a flag that we recognise.
Right. And the text itself actively goes against that. It's like, you know, who cares what flag they're under? Yep. It actively says that. And I suspect that was the case. And this is why I bring up Stuart Beatty as being like a first-time director, because... given a text that doesn't specify race, and yet actually seeing it realized, it's difficult not to look at the fact that he cast Asians as all of the opposing soldiers. I'm like, really? Now I get why this thing was made fairly recently.
No, I had the same feeling that even the first time I watched it, and I was like, no, they're not supposed to be, it's not supposed to make a point like that.
Yeah.
The point of it is supposed to be that an invasion happening is just destroying everything, regardless of who they are. It doesn't matter, and we don't need to know that. And that was what I really liked about it, and that was one of the fall downs of the making of the film for me.
Yeah, and admittedly, I don't really have a problem with more, like, you know, conservative leanings when it comes to action movies, because, you know, it's kind of baked into the culture. And for those who want to complain that I'm conflating being racist with being conservative, here's a quarter, find one of the only still existing payphones and call someone who cares. Come on. Let's be real about this.
Well, yeah, I agree.
And to that degree, it did actually remind me of a movie I have seen, Red Dawn. It is basically the exact same formula. The idea of teenagers banding together as like the last line of defense against, what was it, the Coalition of Nations, the pseudonym they put together, which, especially with our proximity to the rest of Asia, I'm like, again, kind of, you didn't need to bring that into text, Stuart. You really didn't.
I totally agree. I think it was a really big faux pas of the film, particularly because Australia, you know, we went through this whole idea of, you know, during the 70s and stuff, of this Asian invasion. I mean, we're
still going through that.
Yeah, and it's but it, you know, it's always been like a kind of a contentious point in Australia, and I think that it was a big faux pas, and it really made it fall down for me. That was one of the only things, but But it was a big problem.
And it actively did kind of like screw my expectations in regards to the film because, you know, there is an Asian guy in the main group who disappears around the time that the invasion starts. So I was like, wait, you're not going to do that on me. You're not going to make him part of it, which thankfully they didn't.
No.
To their credit, that happened. But, and actually, I did like how they played around a little bit with like the intelligence of the main characters. Like you had Homer. I have to keep reminding myself that he's of Greek descent in case I just constantly just remind myself of like that other Homer who used to be good and isn't so much anymore.
I didn't even make that connection.
It's like him being shown as the other doofus, but as soon as shit gets real, he and the bimbo of the group. They're the ones who have the sturdiest head on their shoulders and actually have their shit together, which I thought was kind of interesting. And
it's really hard for me to separate the film from the books, and I guess that's a good thing in a way, but that was kind of, I think, from the author's perspective and reading it as a teenager and going through that, that was what was so meaty and good about it, was that these characters were given opportunity to really show who they really were and not be the stereotype that they...
I totally get that.
Been in high school.
Yes, and how to put it...
Hello, Breakfast Club.
Well, yeah, of course. That's probably why I was vibing with it, because I fucking love that movie. Well, the best things about
being... You are your mother's son.
Yeah, growing up with an 80s kid probably helped with that. But it's just, like, I feel like I'm in the same position, even without having read the books, of being unable to separate them from the books, because I don't really know how else to word it. The film suffers from first part of a bigger series-itis.
Yes, I could not agree more, and it's a shame because my sister watched it with me for this podcast, and so we had seen it when it came out. She's also read all the books, and we rewatched it, and two things sort of came out of it for us, and one was, why are we finding this so uncomfortable to watch? And then we looked at each other and went, oh, because we're fucking adults now. We can't deal with this teenage. Like, it's just like, what, guys, get it together. Who cares who kissed who? And then we went, oh, we were teenagers when we read this the first time around.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was, it's a shame because it takes... If you take, say, for instance, the one that springs to mind is Harry Potter. The first one's always going to be a little bit awkward, and then people start to grow into their characters, and they spend years, you know, defining themselves as these characters. And as the movies go on, they get better and better. And I really feel like if the next ones had been made and kept all the same cast, I think something really could have happened there.
Yes, and even taking on its own merits, it's not that, like, strong of a story. Like the point that's considered like the big climax, which is them taking out the bridge, it's like a main supply line for
the Asian invasion.
I was just gonna say the enemy taking on board what you said.
You go with that.
It's just, yeah, the enemy that apparently a lot of white people still think can't drive properly. Hey, they're gonna bring the racism out of it. I'm gonna try and meet it halfway. Let's be honest. Like, why else would that decision be made? It's like that's the bit that really gets to me about this movie. Like, what other purpose would there have been in specifying the race of the invaders when it wasn't specified before, other than to play into Australian jingoism?
Potentially, again, I'm gonna say it was a very bad decision. And it was a difficult... It's difficult to get over. It's difficult to get past.
Yeah.
It tarnishes the whole thing, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hate to say it, and this is something that is shared with the movie we'll be talking about afterwards.
Mm.
Like, as soon as it got to the point where I noticed what all the enemy soldiers looked like, it was like a moment where I just went, oh, dear.
Mm.
Well, like whatever verve I had to, like, actually get through it was sapped somewhat.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I understand your feeling.
Now, with that said, I still hesitate from calling this outright bad, because even though it does have, like, you know, the more American side of the Red Dawn formula in it, it at least does some justice to it, because like you were saying, like the characters actually feel real and go past the cutouts that they're presented as initially. And as far as like creating a sense of dread, like, you know, this could happen, as much as its connection to reality is quite
tenuous.
Uncomfortable, I was about to say. Yep. Quite uncomfortable.
Mm.
I still think it did well enough in what it set out to do. I still don't think that Stuart Beatty could be all that good as a director, because between this and Frankenstein, he doesn't show... He shows some talent with, you know, bringing text to visual, as far as, like, you know, like, visual shorthand and foreshadowing. He has, like, a decent understanding of that. But I get why this and Frankenstein are his only two directorial efforts, because he's a lot better as a writer, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
So...
Thankfully. It's, for me, once it took me a while to get past. Firstly, that, I was like, oh, that's right, they gave the invaders a race, I forgot about that. And then once I got past the whole teen angst thing, I actually got really drawn into the film. I did feel a sense of dread about it. I did feel a sense of, even though I've seen it and I knew what happened, I still got the racing heart beat and
as opposed to the racist heart, which is what they were aiming for. I'm not letting this go, sorry.
Obviously.
And what you were saying in regards to, like, you know, the teenaged angst, like, I consider myself to be someone who got an adult body at 15 and still hasn't matured into it properly. Like, the reason why I brought up Hunger Games is because when those movies came out and I was, like, well and truly into my adulthood, or at least young adulthood, I could still vibe with it because I still feel like I'm part of that generation, even though at 24, I'm probably quickly on my way out of it. But at the same time, it worked on that same level, even though it was disconnected from, like, you know, the more fictionalized aspect of the thing. As far as this, like, you know, the teenagers being the ones who, you know, take charge and defend the home front and actually, you know, keep the peace, I vibed with it. I wasn't entirely on board with who they were defending it against, as visualized, but at the same time, it worked well enough for me.
I should point out here that your interest in movies goes very deep, and mine is really shallow. It's all about just how it makes me feel, and then I move on. But having said that, I've been called an empath before because of the way that I'm able to, or not able to, but I just tend to take on other people's feelings. And it happens to me when I'm watching movies. And speaking of The Hunger Games, the first time I watched that, and I'd met my husband, I met him when I was 30. So I was in my 30s, okay, and not really vibing with teenagers at that point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But during the watching of that film, I was so freaked out and anxious and scared about what was going on that my husband looked over at me and said, "Has this happened to you?" And I really still got into Tomorrow When the War Began, despite having not read the book since I was a teenager, despite already knowing what happened, but I really got into the excitement of it.
And don't get me wrong.
But maybe that's just me.
It still feels a bit insubstantial as its own story. It still feels like it's meant to lead into something bigger. And
well, it was.
And that is the effect. And I honestly do believe if it came out in the wake of Hunger Games, it could have gotten that bigger push
what
it needed.
What a shame.
I also would have liked to see how this turned out. I mean, like, I, you know, rode along for Hunger Games, Maze Runner, even the Divergent films. And those are utter garbo. I was willing to stick it out for them. I easily would have done it for this if they came into cinemas with that regular schedule. I would totally would have been on board with it.
Well, maybe it's worth... I'm thinking it might be worth checking out the series. I'm scared, but I might try it. Have you heard anything about it?
Well, here's the thing. It would certainly make a change from, like, the last time I read books in response to movies, and that's when I read all the 50 Shades of Grey books.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah, I took it for about the third wave of young adult adaptation. Yeah, 50 Shades is the fifth wave. Fan fiction rewritten blandly to suit the audience, which I'm pretty sure is going to destroy the industry if it goes unchecked, as far as I'm concerned.
I couldn't even, and
there was part of that as well. It's like, even with, you know, certain things that I still haven't gotten over yet to do with that movie... It's like like watching Tomorrow When the War Began. It was like nostalgia for a time back when compelling young adult novels didn't have to resort to fetishizing medical illness or fetishizing unhealthy relationships to make their mark. That's my perspective. It was like a nice breath of slightly stale air.
Hey, speaking of, this is a great segue from that, because I meant to also point out and bring up with you, what did you think about the scene where Ellie's been asleep for 16 hours and she gets up and Corey's reading a book and Ellie says to her, "Good book." Corey says,
"Better than the movie." I was like,
and Ellie says, "They usually are."
I was like, really? No, you do not get to make that joke. I'm sorry. Actually being able to do that sort of like somewhat snide attention to that, like, I, Tonya, totally deserve the snide comments it made towards its audience and its place as a film.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't nearly that good.
So I wonder if it was in the book. Because I can't remember it to that extent.
I honestly hope it wasn't, because if it was, it makes this entire adaptation, like, debacle in the first place, worse. Because it's like, if that was in the original book, that means the original author didn't want this for it. So that,
So I found that really, I didn't remember it from watching the film the first time, and we sat there and we went, did they just say that?
You did not earn that. You did not earn the right to make that joke. So,
all right. Well, okay. What did we think of it? So what's our spectrum here?
All right. On a scale between, let's say, summer teenage romance, like mm-hmm. the purest, highest
mm-hmm.
they can feel at that time,
mm-hmm.
to the angstiest of angst. Like we're talking, yeah. Shutting yourself up into your closet, screaming Simple Plans Untitled, how could this happen to me? In terms of just, like, no.
Turning your Marilyn Manson
yeah.
album up to full blow.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere in between. Like, it's as the movie has, a bit of angst and a little bit of romance, not much of either to make too much of a deal out of it.
Me personally, I see it as like, as far as like the emotional wavelength, which
yeah.
is more what I'm trying to do with this
yeah.
comparison. It's like, it has some good points, some questionable points. it was good for what it was, and I feel like I met some interesting people through it.
Right.
It is high school, so it's squarely in the middle.
You're right. It is 100% high school. Cool. All right. Speaking of high school,
let's dive straight into the trailer for Rim of the World.
Everybody's gone.
Look, honey, this summer is going to be great. You're going to make friends. There's nothing to worry about.
Welcome to the Rim of the World Adventure Camp.
Alex, I am your leader, Logan.
I love you.
Mom. And Zen, where are you going?
I don't think we should wander this far. Maybe we should head back?
Follow me.
What was that?
I've never seen anything like them.
It's Independence Day. It's June, Gabriel!
We just need to wait here until the adults realize they left us.
Did you see the size of that thing?
Before we get talking about this movie, I do feel like I need to clarify why this movie in particular.
Okay.
Because the way that this was scheduled out, we were sorting out the picks for this episode
mm-hmm.
right after Murder Mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I don't want... And here's the thing. I actively picked something I thought would be good with this one.
Yeah, you said that. I
actively did because... and here's the thing. I don't like the director of this. Mick G, the guy behind the Charlie's Angels movies
okay.
and like a bunch of just boring action slop. A couple of years ago, he came out with a movie called The Babysitter, which was brilliant.
Okay.
It's like slapstick meta-fictional horror. It's like Scream meets Brain Dead in its own way. It's so goddamn fun. And I'm like...
So you were hoping this guy was on an upward trajectory
It seemed like... Well, because that the babysitter was that far outside of his comfort zone of just standard action slop, it seemed like with this one, which from the outset looked like a big bunch of like 80s Spielberg worship...
Okay, so I need to stop you right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need to pitch my theory about this film to you.
Okay.
Before you give away too much else. To me, because I know you will have looked into this film.
Okay.
Deeply.
Okay.
And I did not.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I went in completely cold, no idea what this even was, genre-wise, nothing. I just pressed play on a movie that you'd given me the title for and went, what the actual fuck is this? What have you gotten me into? I am not 13. I don't get this.
Yeah.
What's happening? And why does it look like every film that I watched during my childhood and beyond and into my teenage years? So in the first 10 or 15 minutes, I'm like, okay, well, is it The Goonies? Is it Sandlot Kids? Is it The Karate Kid? What is going on here? Wait, let me pitch you my theory. And I was like dying inside at the hide, the absolute hide of whoever the fuck these people are, and I don't know what they're doing here. And then they're in the camp kitchen and it's Jurassic Park. And I went, oh, are you doing what I think you're doing? Have you just mashed together all of the your favourite films? Is this a bunch of guys my age sitting around going, all right, let's grab all the movies that we watched during our primary and high school life and smoosh them all together in some kind of homage to that time when we all used to go and see films and actually enjoy them?
That is a very sound theory. In fact, actually looking into it, the writer, Zach Stentz, I believe his name is.
He sounds like somebody my age.
He's worked on like a lot of comic book stuff, like Thor and X-Men First Class and Agent Cody Banks for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the if no one else remembers it, don't worry, the lead star doesn't either. I feel so bad for that show because Frankie Muniz literally cannot remember his own career because of a motorcycle accident.
Gabe!
Yeah, I know. I'm a terrible person.
You are. Okay.
Okay, besides that, Zach Stentz actively set out to make a tribute to, like, the Spielberg canon of the 80s, which includes stuff like Jurassic Park and Goonies and all this other stuff. And and it's very much on the forefront of the film because it keeps making, like, quips and mentions of, like, you know, the cliches of the genre.
It's it's Star Wars, Independence Day. It just went on and on and on.
Yes, yeah, and here's the thing. What I was talking about before with, like, that moment in Tomorrow when I sort of like, oh, dear. I can pinpoint the instant it happened with this movie. Take it out and put it in my box.
Oh. But
as soon as that happened, I'm like, no.
Really?
I was just like, no.
That's the bit that bothered you? What about the guy sitting around the campfire going, why are we talking to black guys from the 80s?
I'll get to that. I'll get to that. It's just that...
Was that not part of it? That was what... That's what films were like.
Well, here's the thing. That was the moment where I kind of, like, gave up entirely.
Did you?
Like, hard quit. And then as it kept going with, like, that bit of, like, why do we talk like black guys from the 80s? I'm willing to bet that that was just justification so that they could make the only black character in the main group both the comic relief and the one who is the dumbest of the main group, and the one who was the most cowardly of the main group.
Okay.
Well, real classy there, white guys who made this.
Yeah, now you're ruining it for me.
It's just, and here's the thing. With the idea of, you know, delving into stereotypes and cliches and tropes of the genre, like Babysitter did, It definitely acknowledged a lot of them, probably too many of them, but it didn't do anything with them. It just went, yeah, this is something you've seen 100 times before, so what's one more going to hurt kind of thing. It's just like, it didn't do anything with actual cliche. And, yeah. And it really does feel like a mashup of a lot of other better movies that people could be watching.
Yeah.
It's and
you know what else? Like, what I don't get is who is it pitched to? Who's it appealing to? Is it pitched to 13-year-olds or is it pitched to people my age who remember all these films?
I think it's a blind grab at both.
Right.
Quite frankly.
And kind of misses the mark on both.
On both, exactly. Because 13-year-olds are smarter than this, and people who remember those old movies will remember that, yes, they were actually better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're and then you're also leaving out huge swathes of audience.
Yeah.
You're going to miss the mark. It's going to go over most people's heads, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, hell, if it wasn't for the fact that it was made by the same guy who did Babysitter, I probably would have completely skipped this movie.
Yeah.
Except that I kind of set up my own hopes and dashed my own hopes on top of that. I actively feel bad that I went into this hoping it would be good because it really isn't. Like, it's excruciatingly not funny, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, mate, it's not funny.
Like,
the crassness of it.
And here's the thing, I have no problem with crass humour, but at least make it, like, actually funny and not just crassness for its own sake. Like the thing with the take it out and put it in my box. I'm like, I get what you're trying to do here, as a callback to the really tenuous, like, double entendres of old. But that was really tenuous. Like, that was just...
And the scantily clad woman standing in front of him as well, which was just...
That was really bad.
And the penis of the alien in his mouth, like...
Honestly, I don't know what, like, bothered me more about that. The fact that they actually went with that joke... Or that the
and kept going with it.
Or that the animation is that shit.
It was.
Like, the CG is horrendous in this thing.
They certainly weren't spending money on special effects.
It looks like PS3 graphics, which would be fine if this was over 10 years ago. And here's the thing. I liked Babysitter because it was Mick G getting out of his comfort zone and trying something different, which apparently was a good fit for him. But he's back to business as usual with this stuff. Like, right down to the fact where as soon as the alien invasion happened, all the colour just went and it went really orange. I kept expecting Smash Mouth to start playing at any moment. Like, somebody wants to... In fact, that would be... somehow less cliche than the actual music picks in this thing. I have to keep reminding myself that Mick G got started directing music videos because he seems to have forgotten that entirely with this shit. It is just like, it looks horrendous.
What was your term? Action slop?
Action slop, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, just like, the more of this, please, apparently.
Spoon feed me.
Yeah, and here's the thing, action isn't even that good.
No,
that's
not as dreadful.
It's like, that's what really got me about, like, Mick G's career. He made a career out of being an action director when he doesn't really know that much about it, just judging by how it's presented, because it's like a bunch of shaky cam that makes things difficult to see, a bunch of shitty CG, which makes you wish you couldn't actually see it properly. And there's, like, a bunch of people just standing around waiting, you know, looking at nothing, you know, looking at a thing of nothing that'll be added in later.
Yeah.
This is so tenuous.
But isn't that what they did in the 80s?
Well...
Was there a point to that?
Well, yeah, but there the characters were interesting, and the actual coming of age, overcoming your fear, you know, idea. And also, we brought up Breakfast Club before, the idea of... We are not our labels that they tried to push in at the end, which had also no actual basis in anything.
Yeah.
It was just trying to garner all of this, well, empathy, I guess, for characters who are so cardboard cutout. I kept expecting them to, like, a stiff breeze to knock them all over.
Well, see, I got more... I didn't think of Breakfast Club, which is weird because that's... Exactly.
It's part of the slurry that they made here.
Yeah. what I got was, and poorly done, was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Like, I had that sort of, you know, the spoilt brat kid and the good kid, Charlie himself being the main young one. And I just, and again, but exactly what you're saying, but didn't pull it off. I just started with that and ended with it. Didn't give them, didn't allow them to really redeem themselves come out and show who they really were. They just sort of stagnated, didn't they?
It's just like the only way that this could have worked is if it ended with the aliens winning.
Destroying humanity.
Yeah, exactly. Like, go full on Cabin in the Woods. Okay. We lost. This was a shining example of humanity, and we do not deserve to live. That would have been an ending. And that would have totally fitted in with, like, Babysitter's more subversive edge, which I keep coming back to it, but again, it's the reason why I wanted to watch this.
Disappointment is a hard pill to swallow.
It's like, it's the reason why I recommended it in good faith, because I genuinely hoped it would be good, and now I have to eat humble pie because I sat through what I'm willing to bet is going to make my worst of the year list. I seriously doubt that I'm going to find enough worse that it doesn't make it on there.
Wow.
This was
action slop.
Well, beyond being bad, which it is, beyond being its own brand of racist alongside Tomorrow When the War Begins, beyond that, it's
rated R.
Well, it's just
R for racist.
It's not. If only the rating systems work that way.
How good would that be?
That would be good. It's not just that it's bad, it's a disappointing level of bad. And the fact that I got myself in a position to be disappointed makes me even angrier at this thing.
You did say you were going to have a good rant about this. You do seem pretty angry.
Yeah, I am so fucking pent up about this thing. I want to apologize to you for making you watch it. That's how bad this is. I actively feel bad that I recommended it.
I had to watch it in two parts. I got halfway through and I was like, oh, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And I dragged myself through the second half of it.
I dragged myself through everything past the not even 10-minute mark. Because that's the thing. The moment of...
Yeah, it wasn't even 10 minutes.
That realization of just the whole, you know, taking down, sticking in my box. Like, around the 10-minute mark, but not quite, and there's still, like, another hour and a half to go afterwards, I'm like, end me. Just end me.
I came in here going, like, it was okay, you know, and now you've made me angry too. And I'm angry with you for making it much dribble.
See, here's the thing. As much as I, like, will happily rant about whatever bad movie I've seen, because the chance to vent is one of the few good things about sitting through bad movies, I don't like taking away good experiences from people. I genuinely don't. The fact that I've turned you around in the worst way to this movie.
Yeah.
As bad as I think it is, I feel worse about that, honestly. I feel bad that you actually had,
I'm
like...
I have to get a bottle of gin on the way home and...
Yeah.
My sorrows.
How could this happen to me? We've come full circle now. Oh, man.
Oh, teen angst.
And this is the kind of thing that is definitely going to make you feel bad for the world as it exists.
Well, I don't even think we need to...
Okay, on...
Go on, then.
On a scale between the movie poster for The Goonies and its original painted glory to a really cheap photocopy.
I'm going to go a really cheap photocopy that somebody has rested their coffee cup on and left coffee stains.
Yep, I'm going with that too. This was a real, like... This feels like revenge for Murder Mystery because, like, you were actively, like, really aggravated by that. And I tried to...
I was also hungover.
And it's like, after I tried to defend the thing, it's like some part of the back of my brain went, you know you're going to have to get yours for that. And I'm like, well, okay, listen, I've got that out of my system.
Well, here's to onwards and upwards.
Onwards and upwards, and hoping that I don't get swayed as easily into recommending drivel.
Yeah, I've got my fingers crossed.
But only time will tell us. So here's a really tentative, hopefully we won't regret this later, high five.
Yeah.
Okay, you've been listening to Movies with Kane and Tal. Once again, thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.